According to Freddie Mac, over the last couple years, our 30-year mortgage rate has averaged anywhere between 6 and 7%. As of last week, it was right there in the middle at 6.49%. And as the Milwaukee Journal pointed out earlier this year, due to these mortgage rates, homeowners are increasingly choosing to invest in major home projects rather than seeking out buying a new home altogether. It's the Lee Rayburn Show, and this hour it's all about your home improvement, your projects, your home maintenance, and your questions with answers from our guests. Joining us this hour are Chad Spate from Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp, the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs and past president of NARI Madison, NARI being the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. Chad, welcome back to WPR News. Oh, you're muted.
Thanks, Lee. Great to be here.
And Tony, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me on.
So considering that we are more likely to invest in our home than seek out new homes these days, I'm interested in what those investments from your perspective currently look like. And I'll start with you, Chad. What sort of home improvement projects are trending right now?
Sure. Well, so the mix of projects that we're doing has remained remarkably consistent over the last few years. So for example, we continue to do a number of kitchen and bathroom renovation projects, which have always been a staple of home improvement work. And it's understandable why we all use those rooms a lot. People continue to add on to their homes. Sometimes the additions are within the footprint of the home. So for example, a lower level basement might be a candidate to finish off if it is reasonably dry and can be appropriately renovated to provide good air quality and good headroom and utility. Often installing, say, an egress window on projects like that. Occasionally, an attic space is large enough to warrant finishing, particularly in homes that only have one finished main level. It might be kind of a bungalow. But occasionally, there are third floor attics that qualify for some sort of renovation. And then sometimes we're adding on to the footprint of the home, either by raising the roof or adding a foundation outside to, say, put on a screen porch or living space. So really, we see all of those things going on right now in a way that is consistent with, say, the last 10 years.
All right. And Tony, what are you seeing at Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs?
Very similar to Chad. We have similar customer needs. I guess I would add to that that some of our customers were having to do infrastructure updates, more common with part of our larger remodels, like plumbing and sewer line replacement, not as much knob and tube, still doing a little bit of the insulation upgrades in conjunction with the other needs of kitchen, bathroom, additional living space. Moving laundries in the first floor has become popular too, to add on to getting like a first floor bathroom where one doesn't exist. People trying to have more of a universal design or age in place. It's been popular with our customers.
You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Tony, going back to you for a moment, we've had high humidity recently across Wisconsin, some reports of mold, and how do we mitigate that in our homes?
You know, the first thing is to try to keep bulk moisture out in the form of rainwater. So making sure that you're grading around the house, that there hasn't been little critters creating tunnels to divert it into your basement, or that the ground hasn't settled, making sure your gutters are clear, keeping that bulk water out. You might have to add some additional dehumidification, separate dehumidifier, or talk to your HVAC contractors. Some of the newer equipment can handle reducing humidity better than previous models. those are good places to start.
And Chad, when we're thinking about remodeling our kitchen or our bathroom, that does come with some of the plumbing that Tony mentioned. How has plumbing changed over the last decade, 20 years or so? I think my new pipes are no longer pipes, but plastic.
Yes, that's a great example of how things have changed. And of course, we're still using copper pipe on some occasions, but plastic is very popular and can be very user-friendly. And other things that we've seen are faucets that are activated by simply touching the faucet. Mm-hmm. So you basically leave it on and you touch it to start and stop the water. And that way, if you tend to use a particular temperature of water, you don't have to worry about finding that sweet spot with your control when you're turning it back on. Toilets have become a little fancier. There are a lot of bidet toilets that are nice, and toilets that are also designed to be easier to keep clean. And of course, showers, there are a variety of fixtures that can be installed in a high-end shower that are really nice, but a feature of a typical shower faucet that's been around for a while, but every now and then we still have people that don't have it, is a pressure balanced faucet.
Yeah.
Which is particularly nice so that when someone flushes the toilet, you're not suddenly experiencing a change in temperature.
My sister has a touchless faucet in her kitchen now. So when her hands are dirty, she can just turn that on. Is that something you see as well? I sometimes worry about the reliability of it, though.
Yes, and of course, that's always a concern with the higher tech gadgets. There is the possibility that they're not going to function well. And so we tend to be a company with a philosophy of being a late adopter to many of these things. Mm-hmm. We don't try to encourage that people have the latest, greatest thing, because it may not end up being such a great thing. But once a product has established its reliability, we have installed a few of those touchless faucets, and a lot of times it's driven by the customer demanding it. Yeah. And as far as I know, they work pretty well these days.
Tony,
our customers have been requesting the touchless. We even had one that had a voice activated faucet, Chad.
Does that work? Do you have to engage it like, hey, Google, or ask Siri or something like that?
They were smarter than me. And I think there was one story where a TV show was on that activated their faucet unintentionally. But they've really enjoyed it. And early adopters of technology, it incorporated into like their Google Home system or whatever they were using. So. Yeah.
What about the smart home? Is that a fad, or is that something that is the future as you see it, Tony?
It depends on the customer. I mean, where we've been incorporating it more is smart water monitoring.
What does that mean exactly?
Yeah. So it's like a leak detection system.
Oh.
And it goes on your water main, and it can sense unusual water events. It learns your systems. Your patterns of water usage, and let's say you're away and there's a high water usage, it will shut off the water. Huh. And some insurance companies are requiring customers to install these on larger houses with so many different fixtures and plumbing. There could be just something could fail, and you don't want to have thousands of gallons in your water in your house. And this is a system that's relatively inexpensive to install. And there's an app on your phone. You can say, oh, no, I'm just taking extra long shower or watering the plants today. And that's been a more common thing that we've been incorporated, especially if we can't replace all the old fixtures in a house. Like, here's an add-on that can give you some additional protection so you won't have a story around the holidays.
Yeah, that sounds like an investment that could save you some money down the line and a lot of trouble.
and maybe even save you some insurance money. So talk to your insurance broker. That might be something that makes sense for you.
Chad Spate, what about you in the smart home? Where are you seeing it being installed?
Yeah, so the other area is in lighting.
Yeah,
it is possible to orchestrate lighting effects or turn off lights when you're not at home, things like that. Very useful. And I would just add to Tony's excellent comment about the water sensing. One area that this really helps potential homeowners is if you have a toilet that is not sealing well.
Yes.
It can detect the running toilets. And so that's a thing that a lot of us end up needlessly paying for water that we shouldn't be paying for, that's just going down the drain. Because the seal on our toilet gasket is malfunctioning.
Or the flapper goes old. How often do, I replace a flapper in the toilet every couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
Just yesterday, I came home and I didn't get to use my flow sensor alert because my wife alert system was fully activated and the toilet tank to bowl bolt failed.
Oh.
And the toilet started flushing on the floor because the bolt had just popped off after 24 years. It's a very uncommon failure, but had my wife not been home to alert me, the system would have caught it. So there's, you know, things break.
So good thing you had the wife alert system installed in your home, Tony.
Oh, it was excellent. Even had the salty sailor mode activated as well. So
I got it. So I recently had an overflow in our second floor sink. It leaked down to the bottom. I have some bubbling paint now down on the first floor. So when you have that sort of leak, even after you've cleaned it up, what's the residual damage and what should I be considering now that I'm seeing some of this paint start to bubble?
It would be, how long was it wet? Was it able to dry out? Do you smell anything weird?
Okay.
You know, and then it's being careful. Like if it's been, I think it was within 48 hours or longer, if you start to open up walls and there were molds happening there, you could spread things around more, you know, even the dead spores. So that you might want to consult some experts in the area that, water restoration people have microbiologists that can have a containment plan for cutting that open. And sometimes it just dried out and it's just a superficial repair and you're fine. But if it's a larger area, especially in basements, it can tend to go unnoticed and it can get more widespread. And you just don't want to make a bigger problem than you have. Common areas that we see are like water lines to refrigerators can go unnoticed for a long time, or a long time leak that's happening in a bathroom, or high humidity. If people have a humidifier on their furnace and they're cranking it up to tropical temperatures during the winter time, and you get a lot of mold in closets or attic roofs or things like that. So those are areas to just be aware of and mindful of in the quantity. But hopefully if you catch it early and you dry it out, generally you're set up for better for success. It doesn't hurt to get an expert in there that knows mold and how to test for it and get a good containment plan if you're concerned at all.
That's Tony Trapp from Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. Also joining us, Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison. And you can join us as well at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. As Jim did, Jim says he has a two-bathroom home. One currently has a tub and showerhead. And Jim would like to have this one remodeled. He's thinking of removing the tub and going with only a shower there as well. Is there any advantage to having a home without a tub? Jim and his spouse are in their 70s and the tub never gets used other than to collect the water from the shower head. Chad?
Yeah, this is a conversation we have with a growing number of homeowners because accessibility and safety are primary goals that our clients tend to have. And if you talk to a realtor, certainly you will typically hear, and I think it's good advice, that it is good to have one functioning tub in a home. And so our question would be the second bathroom. I believe the caller said they have two bathrooms.
Right.
So Is it possible to keep the tub and renovate the other bathroom to have a more functional and accessible shower in it? Does it simply make sense to consider letting go of having that tub, which we have done for a number of clients over the years, where they're deciding, you know what, no one uses a tub here, and many home buyers aren't that interested in having a tub. It's a risk. It's definitely a risk you're taking, because you are removing a fixture that many people have the expectation they'll have at least one tub if they want to take a soaking bath because, say, they've had an injury or something.
My parents are in their 70s as well. They had their tub removed in one of their bathrooms. And part of that is, you know, getting over the lip of the tub and being able to walk into a shower is much more, as they age, is much safer for them, and they can count on that. And in fact, there is the question of how aging parents can keep from slipping in the shower and what can be done to make sure that they're safe in the bathroom. Tony?
100%. I mean, we had a client where they were insistent having the tub, and they're at the age where this was risky. So we said, okay, we'll switch it to back to a tub shower. And then we were back 3 months later to take it out and put in just a shower because they needed that access. There are solutions for folks that, let's say they had a sudden injury and they need a solution right away. There are some companies that can cut out the side of that tub, save the piece, and make it easier to transfer in. It's not always the most beautiful solution, but it is a solution for folks that need something to happen sooner than doing a sponge bath. So if you can plan and make it the way you want it, and maybe for your situation it makes sense to eliminate tubs, like Chad says, but some folks, even for kiddos, washing off kids or animals, having that tub option is nice to have if you have enough space to do it, or just add another bathroom.
But that is an option if it's in the budget. Let's go to Mark.
If it's in the budget.
Right. Let's go to Mark in Madison next. Mark, hi.
Hi. I'm having my siding replaced, and I'm wondering whether this would be an opportune time to add spray foam insulation into the walls of my house.
Tony, you want to take that?
Sure. There's a lot of different insulations if you're having the siding replaced. Spray foam is definitely one. Cellulose is another one that can be blown in to get the right density. I think it kind of, you have to look at some certain things like your interior wall surface. For example, if you had paneling and not a properly attached drywall, sometimes cellulose might pop off that paneling, and some other alternative insulations might make sense. Maybe a combination of loose fill insulation and rigid foam. So it's a great time to explore your options for insulation. If you do spray foam, I would highly recommend you explore having a drainage plane behind your siding. So if any moisture gets back there, it won't be trapped. It's just, everything has its pros and cons. That is definitely an option. We typically use spray foam if the cavity is completely open and they can see everything and seal it up well in high moisture situations like in bathrooms or kitchen. I haven't done it as often in a closed cavity situation where they inject it and it expands, but that can be done. I don't know. What about you, Chad?
I would agree with your recommendations there. It really does depend on the house, how large is the cavity, and cellulose is typically the best opportunity for dense packing those cavities. And the other thing that you alluded to that I was just going to reemphasize is that when you're putting siding on the home, there is an opportunity to add a layer of additional insulation on the exterior of the home. And here again, the devil's in the details. We need to make sure that we're not trapping moisture in the walls, or we're not allowing the dew point to be reached on the old exterior of the home, where then you can end up having other problems down the road. But there are ways to hyper insulate a home responsibly and effectively if you really want to knock it out of the park with your home air sealing and insulating.
Mark, I'm curious, how old is your home?
It was built in 1962.
1962. Do you know the last time the insulation's been replaced or you've been back inside there?
To my knowledge, the main part of the house has never had insulation replaced in the walls. We've added insulation in the attic.
All right.
Okay.
If you do add insulation in the walls, keep an eye on your windows. So that's opening through that wall system. If that's not properly flashed and you start insulating that wall cavity really well, it's a potential of trapping moisture in there and causing problems if you don't have enough roof overhangs or the window flashing isn't super robust. So I would just be aware of that as well. You might want to consider expanding the scope of work if you do add robust wall cavity insulation, that you don't end up with a wet diaper situation.
Mark, does that help?
Yes, that's been very helpful. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate the call. Thank you so much. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. When else should you consider adding insulation? It seems like it is also one of those investments that could pay down the line if done right. Chad?
Yeah, well, so I just want to remind the listeners about the Home Performance with Energy Star program that is still an existent program that helps to provide just a scientific assessment of how tight a house is and to use infrared imaging to help the homeowner and a potential installer see where are the opportunities. And as that relates to the last caller, when you have a house built in the 60s, the odds are pretty good that there was some insulation installed into those cavities. And so really, it's going to be touching up that insulation and doing a home performance evaluation will give everyone the information they need to focus on improving what you have and not guessing. Yeah.
It also looks at it as a system. So if you make your house even tighter, you might need to add some additional air handling equipment, improve your bath fans, maybe air-to-air exchanger. Maybe if you do have a humidifier on your furnace, that needs to be turned off. Those types of things. So looking at your house, or if your water heater is naturally vented, you don't want to have any backdrafting there or potential carbon monoxide poisoning. So that's a great suggestion Chad has. You're taking this opportunity to improve your house, but it may affect other things beyond just your siding or your attic.
I've got about a minute here, but Vicky in Milwaukee emailed to ask, what's the name of that water leak sensor? How much does it cost? And what would installation be? Can a homeowner install it themselves?
The particular one, there's several out there on the market. The one that we're most common with is the Moen Flow unit. I would recommend consulting with a plumber on your specific situation. And I think it's not inexpensive. It depends on your water size, but it's a couple $1,000s by the time you get it installed.
Moen Flow, you said, Tony?
Yep, that's the one I'm familiar with.
Tony Trapp is the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs and the past president of NARI Madison, the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. Also with us, Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Hope you can join as well for this hour of home improvement. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us to talk@WPR.org. Have an email from Lyle here, Marshall from Menominee. We'll get to your call in just a couple of minutes. I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Lee Rayburn Show on WPR News. Talking home improvement this hour with our experts, Chad Spate from Chad's Design Build in Madison and Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. We welcome your questions and interests at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us to talk@wpr.org. And guys, I've got an email here from Lyle, and this might start a fight. He wants an answer to the age-old question that he and his wife argue about. What's the perfect temperature to set the AC for summer to consider both comfort and efficiency? All right, let the battle begin. Chad, I'll start with you.
I'm not going to pretend to be an air conditioning efficiency expert. I think the best answer to that question would be depending on the system you have, there's probably a better answer, or there's a correct answer to that question. But I would say, generally speaking, what we tend to say in the industry is that somewhere in the vicinity of, say, 72 to 74 degrees is considered to be comfortable. 76, 78 works for some people. I think once you go above 78, I don't know. Tony, I'm interested in your.
Well, I'm just going to say for those folks who set it at 78, I am reluctant to come into your house sometimes in the summer.
In the Trapp household, I delegate that setting to my wife to make sure she is very comfortable, and I adapt to whatever that setting needs to be.
Back to the wife alert system. But we were talking about smart homes before, and this is one of the aspects where smart homes may provide an opportunity for both comfort and efficiency, right?
Our HVAC contractor got us set up with a new smart thermostat, and it's great. If we're away, I can put on vacation mode and drop it down. And I really appreciate that control, and it helps us monitor temperature. And again, if we're away on vacation, to see if temperatures are dropping and there's a furnace problem, we need to call someone to come over and take a look. So I would say while you're occupied, if you're there all the time, do what's best for your house and control that humidity and make sure the occupants are comfortable, and then have a way to monitor if you travel often or you're away from work to make sure something hasn't broken and you can get ahead of that.
Or if you're away at work during the day, you don't need to keep cooling your house, and you can pretty much set that up on a timer or automatically for some of these thermostats now. I would think that that would be an opportunity to be efficient, and then when you come home in the afternoon or evening, be comfortable.
I would defer to Chad and talk to your HVAC contractor to see what's best for your system and its recovery time. I think the days of just setting it one temperature and leaving it, I think there's some room to move it up and down and optimize your usage and energy consumption.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be smart to be on a clock and be able to program it, right, Chad?
Correct. Yeah, and in fact, I'm partial to the older programmable thermostats because we tend to set our AC at 78 when we're not in the house and 76 during the day and near 72 at night. And that's just occupant preference. But my smart thermostat has a mind of its own. And we're battling the howl within the thermostat.
The ones that have the proximity sensors and turn on when you drive home, that was a little challenging for me to adopt. I went back to not as smart thermostat settings if I could.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. The smart might not be as wise as it needs to be yet. So the programmable may be your best bet. Let's go back to your calls now, and we'll go to Robert in Decorah, Iowa. Robert, hello.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, you guys are talking about remodeling and all that stuff, and I'm 72. Wife is upper 60s, we could say, and we bought ourselves a new house, so we've been remodeling it, and to save a little bit of time, we've lifted the carpet and the vinyl and laid all hardwood floor because I have to use a wheelchair. And one of the things about the appliances, we got all new appliances, and my son was installing it for me, and he says, "And oh yeah, your stove, your refrigerator, your dishwasher, they're all linked up to your phone." So now I have to learn something else to do.
Well, how have you found it so far, Robert? Does it work for you, or are you fighting against it a little bit? What do you think?
Well, we haven't started on it yet.
Okay.
We got everything in, and the last thing we got to do now is we stripped the bathroom and took the tub out and put a 4 feet by 4 feet shower so I could shower with handrails on it.
Sure.
So,
excellent.
And that's our last thing we got to do before I could officially move into it. Everybody else has been working like a gangbuster getting it done.
Robert, I appreciate the call, and I expect a follow-up next month to find out how your apps are doing with your appliances. But, Chad, I also wonder about the DIY mistakes that are most common when folks start trying to take some of these projects on themselves, and where you might run up against some trouble or where YouTube might run you the wrong way.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great question. So it's interesting, the caller, Robert, I thought he was going to say they put in the hardwood floors and then discovered their appliances didn't fit anymore in their kitchen. So but that wasn't the case. But that is something that occasionally happens when folks, you know, add flooring material and then they suddenly realize that the tolerances aren't there for their appliances. DIY mistakes. I mean, certainly there are mistakes that can be made by homeowners and contractors alike. I think certainly one of the things that we see will be not doing proper preparation before repairing or refinishing material. That's a common thing. Waterproofing is something that seems to be somewhat mysterious, like I say, with some contractors and with homeowners, and that's a really important detail.
I would say sometimes with us it was folks that get a little ambitious and they're like, "I want to do my bathroom," and they'll tear it out and then they'll start calling people.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's helpful, but it takes a while to activate the team and plan. So you might have a longer pause than you're anticipating from the time of remodeling. And in scope might increase bigger than you want. So keep in mind of potential hazards, asbestos and lead in different materials that you might not be aware of. If you're doing your own demolition, not just in flooring, sometimes the glazing and lead and tiles, ceramic tiles, even more modern materials that might be in there. We get that tested now. And asbestos sometimes in like 80s drywall, a compound could even be there. So we've been doing more hazard testing to try to keep our workers and occupants safe from those things. But yeah.
So health might be one of the big issues when it comes to DIY mistakes and staying safe because you don't know what's in there before you start digging. And full disclosure, I have been accused in the past of measuring once and cutting twice. So let's go get to Marcia Menominee next. Marcia, hello.
Hi.
Oh, you're kind of cutting out there. What do you have for us?
We're in our 70s.
I'm not going to be able to get it, but I get the gist here. It's about the tub shower walk-in conversions and whether or not those are an option for folks who are getting older. Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, I talk about that with folks weekly. Sometimes our company's a solution, but usually the full contractor experience for just that. there's other companies out there that specialize in that area, depending what their goals are. I think Kohler has a special system for that. There's some other specialty local companies that do that. And there's all sorts of options from custom tile surrounds to, panelized systems to five-piece acrylic or fiberglass surround working with your plumber directly. So depending on your budget and who your preferred plumber contractors are, I think you could usually find a solution that works for your price and timeline budget.
Marsha, I apologize. I hope we were able to answer your question. Your cell signal just was not clear enough. Hopefully you call back if you are not able to, did not get the answer you were looking for. But when I had my bathroom remodeled, we wanted to move the toilet. We wanted to rearrange some of the plumbing on that. And that became part of the question of whether or not it was worth it in the long run to keep the plumbing where it is, or to be able to move that around a little bit. And Chad, how do you make those? Because it becomes a cost issue against what you are looking for when it comes to the remodel.
Sure. So that's really where good planning pays off, because a lot of times, you know, we can talk in generalities about what things might cost, but until a contractor and a homeowner work together to figure out what's really going to be required, what do you really want, what's the best solution for you, and if we are going to move things around, how does the cost of that vary from just maintaining your existing layout? And then you can make an informed decision. And typically, to go through that process, that is something that you're not likely to get really good concrete information. You get general information, but to actually develop a plan and figure out the A plan versus the B plan, that's something that, typically a design build firm is going to provide.
Some options.
Within
a budget.
Based on your house and your goal.
Tony?
Yeah. We'll even in some instances, let's say it's a bathroom on the second floor and we can't see the plumbing below, we might do some destructive exploration where we'll cut the ceiling open or open a wall to look at existing conditions. It's not uncommon to have some structural limitations for moving that toilet, or there could be some compromised framing that has to be dealt with, and then people can plan their budgets appropriately around those things.
We started the conversation about the mortgage rates and how more people are more likely right now, trending anyway, to look to improve their home as opposed to looking for new homes. And part of that, with a growing family, has to consider additions and how to best consider expanding the footprint of your home. Tony Trapp, what are some of the ways that we can do that, and how do we start to build a budget and a plan for it?
Certainly. What Chad alluded to, working with a design build firm or a design firm first, is working out on paper. Can that space that you need or additional bathroom that you need, does it make sense to add in your basement if your basement's appropriate height and space, or do you have to look at an addition, and what does your lot size allow that? Do you need to have a conversation with zoning to see if your setbacks are tighter than you anticipated, or do you have space to go up? Or maybe it's just taking an underutilized space and expanding a room inside the footprint, or a bedroom that is not needed for sleeping but could be used for an additional bathroom. Everybody has different needs now. So working with either a design build firm or designer to work that on paper, and then bring in the appropriate trade partners to look at your specific space and give you advice, that's a great place to start.
Tony Trapp there, the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs, also with us. Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build. And there's still time for you to join us as well at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. That basement, Chad, seems to be a perfect opportunity to expand some space if it's not yet finished. But what do I need to consider before even considering finishing it?
Sure. So there are a variety of things. The first, beyond headroom. So with headroom, the Wisconsin Building Code requires that you have 7 feet or more of headroom space for a legally habitable room. Now, it is possible to obtain a variance, and particularly in a basement where it is literally 7 feet from the concrete floor up to the floor joists. Often, if some other things are done as part of that renovation to improve that space and make it safe and comfortable, then in the city of Madison, it's not uncommon for us to apply for a variance and be granted that. But that's the first consideration. It is very expensive to lift a home or to lower the basement floor of a home to add that headroom in a basement. And it's often cost prohibitive. Then there's water. Is the basement dry? Are there systems that have been installed or could be installed that will help to guarantee that that basement stays dry, or at least a high probability of dealing with any water intrusion? Another big factor is that if there is 7 to 7.5 feet of headroom, but a lot of mechanical systems that like ductwork that are basically intruding on that and reducing headroom and space, is it possible to alter those obstructions to provide for adequate headroom? It is allowable in the code to have some obstructions that come down an additional 8 inches, but how costly will it be to comply with that? And then natural light is another consideration.
Sure.
Natural light is a requirement for a legal bedroom, as is egress. And so it is possible to put in an egress window and to add larger windows to provide more natural light. But sometimes people are just looking to have a family room or recreation room, maybe an office. And, those things do not require natural light or egress.
Okay.
For code compliance, but you may want those things. So those are the big things that I can think of.
Tony, when I think of adding space, this would be the low-hanging fruit in the basement, and it would be the easiest, I would think. But also with the heavier rains come wetter basements, and I think of the sump pump and the backup sump pump to keep it dry. But even then, you still see some wet carpet in the basement, finished basements. So from your perspective, what do we need to consider when it comes to adding space down under or maybe even up top in the attic?
Sure. In the basement, I mean, you're exactly right. If you don't have a drain tile or sump pump system, Murphy's Law says by the time you finish it, you're going to have some freak event and have an insurance claim. So it's good to consider that. The best time to add that system is before it's finished. If you want to roll the dice, just be prepared, have more resilient flooring and wall systems and that sort of thing. And how are you going to deal with it, knowing what you're getting into? So the basement is risky because of moisture or radon, water from other bathrooms or sewer backups. There's different ways to manage those. Your attic is not without its challenges either, because you're still dealing with how do we heat and cool that effectively, getting the right headroom. Maybe that floor system in your attic is not robust enough to have it be a living space. It might just be enough for a storage space, and getting up and down the stairs appropriately. A lot of times the older attics have non-compliant stairs, and as Chad alluded to, you could petition for variances, but it's a safety issue. And making sure you have enough room for appropriate insulation and natural light and ventilation. And it's not just a finished condition attic space that you could, if you want to add a bathroom or things like that. So working with a designer, architect, contractor that helps you through that will help evaluate what's the best for you. And it might be grabbing that space you already have or just putting on an addition or a combo.
When you describe, you know, the potential pitfalls of finishing a basement and the challenges of expanding into the attic, in addition, all of a sudden seems like it might be something to consider. And Chad's design build right around the corner from me a couple years ago built a screened-in porch on top of somebody's garage. They had a very limited yard, small yard. And so the idea of a screened porch in the summertime in Wisconsin, I think, is just a beautiful idea because it's all the summer and none of the bugs. So it makes sense to me. But when you have a small footprint like this property did, it went above the garage. And when it comes to considering additions, you know, with the increased temperatures in Wisconsin, maybe a screened-in porch wouldn't be a bad consideration.
Yeah, it's a screened-in porch. Sometimes you can get away from some of the wind bracing requirements or heating requirements of like a 3 or 4 season room. It's a great way to add additional living space and keep those bugs away. They seem to be more of them every year.
not inside the screened-in porch.
Nope. Yeah, it's just a really, really nice space. When folks want to convert that screened-in porch to a 3 or 4 season porch, it's been more complicated than just putting glass on there. We want to make sure that it's safer for wind loads. And then how do we insulate and heat that appropriately? In Madison, if you have a wood-burning fireplace or something of that nature, you don't have to comply with all the regular home insulation codes because it's just heated occasionally. But if you're going to heat it with your forced air system or electric heat, you have to really get it to the same insulation value as your modern house. And so that might become a little bit bigger project than folks are anticipating. But if you're going to make that investment, you want to do it correctly.
Chad, screened-in porches an option and a potentially an affordable one when expanding the house footprint?
Well, it's definitely generally the least expensive roof structure that you would add on to a home. And absolutely, it affords you the joys of being outside without the bugs. And, you know, often there's a ceiling fan that's going to help contribute to comfort when you need the breeze. So it is a great way to go. And we build a lot of screen porches.
Because it would be one of the affordable ways to add an addition, and with the increased temperature, you're able to use it longer and longer throughout the year. So I really do enjoy having a screen porch, or have had a screen porch and have enjoyed it in my time. With the time we have left here today, I want to take a moment to ask about, and I've got about a minute here, but commercial real estate and whether or not commercial real estate, because that's something that, you know, is also on the market. What can be done to improve commercial real estate? With about a minute, Tony, what are some of the big ideas?
Commercial, that's outside our scope of work. We get involved in condos. That's the closest way. Chad, do you have any ideas? We don't really get into commercial as much.
The only commercial real estate I've worked on is my own building. You know, I will say the codes are very different. There are just a lot of other considerations, particularly when you have the general public kind of coming in to a space, as it should be. I mean, there are just things you have to think about that don't apply to a single family home. But what I think we see a lot of is the facade improvements and then similar interior improvements to, you know, bathroom facilities, accessibility.
Updates, yeah. Just simple, basic right. Updates.
And, you know, a lot of great efficiency updates to lighting and heating equipment, certainly.
I want to thank you both for joining us today and looking forward to catching up with you both soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
Congrats.
I appreciate it. And you made it easy this hour. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build. Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs. Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repairs are both Wisconsin Public Radio business sponsors. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.